Hey everybody, Cody Pasby back with you. Wax Packs and Warning Tracks. Another episode, 1 month into the baseball season. How we feeling, folks? Your team still in it? Your favorite player doing well? How's your PC looking? Maybe if you're collecting some of those big rookies, maybe not so good right now. Yeah, I know. We hyped them up so much. Torkelson, Rodriguez, Kelnick, Bobby Witt. These guys have kind of struggled out of the gate. Some nice moments here and there, but the rookies right now, maybe not as hot as we were expecting to start the year, or at the very least, some rookies we weren't expecting to do so well. But there are still plenty of great stories to talk about, plenty of returns. Ronald Acuña Jr. is finally back. His first nine games, as of this recording, have been electric. The guy looks awesome. And to talk about that and much more, I am joined by Bailey, aka Foolish Baseball. You know the YouTube channel. It is one of the best. I talked to Bailey about his Braves and the return of Ronald Acuña Jr., plus how some of the biggest stars in the hobby are faring so far. Shohei Ohtani, Luis Robert among them. Plus, in our Taxi Squad segment, I focused on players who are off to slow starts, some hobby favorites, some rookie stars, some big free agent signings who just aren't quite putting it together right now, and a pitching staff that might be the best in baseball, and it's not who you're expecting. I talked to Bailey about all that and much more. Fun conversation with Foolish Baseball Bailey right now. I just appreciate, like, just having a baseball channel on YouTube that, like, especially, like, with mainstream baseball media, there are times where it feels like we are, I don't want to say dumbing it down, but it's just weird that 20 years into, like, advanced stats being part of baseball, you say something like, I don't know, weighted runs created plus or something like that, and you still get people like, oh, you're throwing the math at me. It's like, every front office in baseball is doing this. So it's nice to, like, have a place to go to watch those videos and listen to that stuff and, like, know that, like, yeah, this is just the way it is in baseball now. And it's like, it's refreshing just to put it that way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, I think I've spoken about it before, but you're right that there is a disconnect between how the game is presented in, you know, the mainstream sports media versus what teams in front offices value.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm guessing that's probably part of the reason that you started Foolish Baseball was just the idea of, like, there is not this voice out there for baseball fans to kind of to go to listen to and to kind of mute the noise of just all those other, you know, whoever it may be, announcers, former players saying this is gobbledygook. There's no reason to listen to this stuff.
I mean, that voice definitely was out there. It just wasn't out there on YouTube. So, right. You know, I'll always, you know, give credit to my sabermetric forefathers, whether they be on, Rec Sport Baseball or Fangraphs or Baseball Prospectus. But all I'm doing is kind of translating that to the YouTube audience.
Right. I know you got your start. I will say the reason I found you originally was middle of the pandemic. There's no baseball. It was a lonely time for a lot of reasons, but for baseball, like, it was, I had nothing, and I was working at a radio station at the time, and one of the hosts said, "Have you ever played out of the park baseball? You ever played this game?" And I said, "No, I've never done it." And I was the guy, like, on MLB The Show, I'm not the guy who goes online and tries to get points. Like, I would just do franchise mode and, like, sim it for years and years. So then he tells me, do out of the park baseball. You won't regret it. About a year later, I am literally 50 years into my franchise mode. And, like, what have I done? It's both a blessing and a curse. And then, yeah, I was like, where could I find more out of the park baseball stuff? And then I saw that your first videos were all out of the park baseball. So, yeah, I appreciate you feeding my OOTP addiction for all those years. What field did you just get those videos out originally?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those cases where when I started playing the game, I had hoped that there was more video content out there. There was some that I definitely used to help me learn. But I think what made it work is that I myself was like a novice at the game and not an expert. And so, you know, I think I could easily help guide a beginner, because it really wasn't that long ago that I was in the same spot they were. So yeah, the first videos I made were basically tutorials about how to play out of the park baseball, and I would post them on the subreddit for the game and like the forums. And that was kind of how I got my first core, first few hundred subscribers, all baseball nerds.
Yeah, it's they're so much fun to watch for. Yeah, like you said, for the baseball nerds and like people like me who are sick in the head and play it for 50, 60, 70 years in franchise mode. There was a point where I'm like, it's the year 2062 in my franchise mode. I'm like now getting this like dark pit in my stomach of like, I'm now thinking of my own mortality and stuff like
right,
this.
Right, yeah.
I think I need to stop. I think I need to go outside and maybe just enjoy the moment. But hey, but it's still a ton of fun. I actually also want to get, we'll get into trading cards from this, because I'm now also at the point where I went so deep in that game where I just saw the new Bowman set just came out, and there are names in there where I'm like, where do I know that name? Why do I know this name? And I realize it's because of Out of the Park Baseball. It's incredible that they just are able to scour like at least, I don't know how many years in the future, but like, it feels like about at least five years into the future of prospects that, you know, from the average baseball fan is not on their radar. So as a Giants fan, like I see like Averson Arteaga now in Bowman, and the first time I ever heard about him was playing Out of the Park Baseball. So I should ask you, for baseball collecting, do you kind of keep an eye on maybe certain guys when you're playing simming Out of the Park Baseball, where you think, okay, maybe I need to keep an eye on this guy, because like he's having a nice little 10-year stretch in this game, and he's out there like he's maybe a high school prospect or an early college prospect, and thinking maybe this game knows what they're talking about?
Yes and no. Like I definitely, it's like you just, if you see a name over and over again, and it's someone making multiple all-star games, or maybe it's a prospect you traded for and then they go on to have a great career, then yeah, obviously you're going to pay attention. In that first Out of the Park Baseball series I did when I was getting started on YouTube, I played as the White Sox, and probably my best player there at the end was Shea Langeliers, who is, you know, of course, traded from Atlanta to Oakland this past offseason, and that Matt Olson deal, and off to a pretty good start. So it, like you said, you know, that was my first exposure to the name Shea Langeliers before he even got drafted out of Baylor. But as far as how I would go about, you know, like prospecting and sort of, you know, sifting through what players do I want to invest in, you know, that are in the minors, I usually am a big proponent of using like the Fangraphs leaderboards, and I'll just try to, you know, go and see, you know, who's tearing it up, you know, at certain levels of the minors, and usually like at a young age too, like relative to their competition. I actually have a series on my second channel called Statline Scouting where I do just that, and very often, you know, I'll go buy a card or two from players that are featured in those videos because they've just sort of caught my eye for one reason or another statistically.
I want to get into your baseball card history a little bit more about who you collect, how you collect. Well, let's just start with, how'd you get started collecting baseball cards? Something you were doing as a kid? Did you get back into it? Give us like your baseball card history.
I'm sure it's a story that's been told many times before, but I was into baseball cards as a kid. And very often it was like going to, I don't even remember where it was, probably like Walmart or something, and they would sell just like basically like junk wax, and I would, you know, and I mean, I was a kid in like the 2000s, so this was, you know, past, but you just the bargain bin or whatever, and I would, you know, learn about players that were just a little bit before my time from like the 80s and the 90s, and you know, occasionally you'd come across one that, you know, you still recognize because they were still playing today. Like you might see, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. or someone like that might pop up. But that was most of my experience with baseball cards was just that, as when I was probably like 10 years old. And then I think, like, you know, many other people, I got back into it as an adult with more disposable income. And so, yeah, around the pandemic, I got interested in baseball cards again. And basically, like, all I do is like, I don't rip packs. I just go and I buy singles. So because for me, in my spot, at the very least, it's kind of like I know what I want. And so I'll just like go get it. I wish I could show you some cards I have, but I'm actually in the middle of moving right now.
Okay.
And I just realized 10 minutes before this that my cards are at my new apartment. This is my old apartment.
That's all good. That's all good. You know what? You got to get the precious, you know, the most precious stuff, the most precious materials. You got to get those locked away and get them safe as soon as possible.
They were high priority. That was like the first trip I made was I brought my baseball card collection.
I know the feeling all too well. I love the thrill of opening a baseball pack, especially like when you're a kid too, like that, just that mystery of like it could be anything. I mean, we just recently saw, I've talked about it on the show, the one of one platinum Wander Franco rookie was opened at a drugstore. It was open at a Walgreens.
Wow.
So like just that thrill of like it could be anything. It's 99.9% doesn't happen. I think one of the best cards I think I ever pulled was that Derek Jeter like misprint card that had like George Bush on it and Mickey Mantle dugout.
That's right.
Pulled that out of a pack from like a sports sports store, so anything could happen. That's fun. But what singles were you looking at before the season? I think I saw one of your videos. You were saying how you collect, that you kind of go like, what guys do I think are going to break out this year? I kind of have the same strategy going into his season, where look at some of the guys that maybe are a little undervalued. So going into 2022, what were some of the singles that you bought this offseason?
I was really big on like Francisco Lindor. And so that's one that's definitely paid off early. I feel like, you know, his value, or at least how he was perceived, had kind of bottomed out, and he had pretty much nowhere to go but up. And he's off to a pretty good start this year for the New York Mets. So that was definitely a guy targeted. Paul Goldschmidt's a guy that I really like, because, you know, he's playing in St. Louis. He's a good player, and he's on what I would call like a kind of sneaky Hall of Fame career. And, you know, anytime you get a chance to get like a Hall of Famer, that's maybe not going to be the most expensive card, that's probably a good thing. So, you know, Lindor, Goldschmidt were, I think, two of like the bigger players I looked at. And then in terms of like the prospect scene, I'm super into Kobe Mayo, who is a Baltimore Orioles prospect. He's just a freak athlete. And he's off to like an all right start this year. I think he's in high A, but I mean, last year he just completely tore it up as a 19-year-old.
That's interesting you say. Yeah, Mayo, I've seen his cards a lot, but I feel like for Baltimore, a lot of collectors have just been, obviously Rushman is still the guy for a lot of them, but Colton Cowser as well last year with the getting drafted high. So I'll definitely be keeping an eye on Kobe Mayo. I'm glad you mentioned Lindor, because I think that I thought last year was going to be like a year where I thought like going into last year he was undervalued, but he was still, you know, coming off of great years in Cleveland, so there was still a lot of positive momentum. So if the Mets can continue this streak, and I mean the way they're playing right now, there's no reason to think that they can't keep this up, especially if Jacob DeGrom comes back healthy. Lindor is the guy I think that has the potential of anybody on that team to be the face of that team, the face of that franchise, and really like I think he's so close to just becoming a massive superstar in New York.
Yeah, I agree. And you've seen it a few times, but it's like some of these guys, when they, you know, they've spent their entire career with one organization and then they make the switch over, they need a year to get ready. And it happened to Goldschmidt. It happened to Bryce Harper, you know, even Machado now looks a lot better than his first year in San Diego. So that's just kind of how it is sometimes. Like these big superstar guys on big superstar contracts, like we've seen it a few times where their first year is just kind of okay, and then their second year is like amazing.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, it just kind of makes me think that all these names you mentioned too are, and I'll throw Nolan Arenado in the mix of like these guys who are off to incredible starts. Arenado had a pretty good year last year, but clearly it's the same things happening right now where I think he's now comfortable in St. Louis. This is, I think, as good a time to take a look at some of these guys who now have, you know, about a decade in the majors. And I think all of those guys you mentioned, I think, are on a Hall of Fame trajectory right now, and are going to be so much cheaper than like these recently called up guys, the Bobby Witts and the Julio Rodriguez's guys, like who have so much hype going behind them, but man, I think the safer investment, like you got all those guys you mentioned, like Machado and Arenado, maybe a little bit higher, but definitely Goldschmidt as well. All these guys who are really, really like on that edge of Cooperstown. Let's get into I do want to ask you this before we actually move on to the next topic.
Sure.
If you could add any stats to the back of a trading card,
because
WAR has been added to the back of trading cards. So that's great to see. But we need more. This is the baseball savant era. We know exit velocities. We know more stats than a baseball card could fill up at this point. But if you could add just one more to the back of a baseball card, what would it be?
Yeah, well, so I really enjoy the Topps advanced stats variants. Like I've collected a few of those just, you know, from players that interest me. I know I have somewhere I have a Sean Murphy rookie advanced stat variant or something like that. And it's just enjoyable to look at because I think he was like barreling the ball up like crazy his rookie year. If I could add one stat, you know, I would add some sort of, I think I would add some sort of plus stat, like an OPS plus. You know, I understand WRC plus, it is a little bit better, a little more accurate, but I much prefer OPS plus as like a public facing metric because it's just so much easier to understand. People know what OPS is. And again, when you talk about these players that have played a decade or so, like, man, the offensive environment was so different in 2014 than it was in 2019 than it is in 2021. So I think, you know, especially for players that have a lot of years with a lot of stats, I think a plus stat really helps contextualize like how much better or worse they were than their peers season to season.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one that if they do add another one to the traditional set, OPS plus feels like the next one to get added. Don't know if we're going to get, I mean, I would love to see like more like exit velocity and stuff on certain guys. That would be really cool. Maybe, you know, it'd be cool maybe if you had like a sort of rotating stat on every card, like one that highlights exactly what this guy is best at. So maybe something like that. I before I forget also, do you have any of the players that you have talked about in your personal collection? I'm guessing you've got one of the best Tim LeCastro collections around. I'm gonna just take a wild guess.
Yeah, well, it's more like I just as a souvenir, I like to get at least one card if I talk about any player. So I have like Tim LeCastro has one autograph that was in like a Topps, I don't even know what it's called, like Stadium Club or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah. And so it's like, I had to get that. And I have like, it's the same thing with like, you know, Jeff Mathis or Rod Barajas. It's not, I don't really like PC them to the point where I have like 10, 20, 30 cards of each player, but it's like, I have to have something to remember them by.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, all right. So we don't have the record Tim LeCastro. We don't have like one of him on the Diamondbacks, one of him on the Yankees now. So, but hey, if there's a Yankee card in series two of Topps, then, you know, maybe things change. All right. Let's move on to the next event and check in on some stars in the hobby. Specifically, I want to talk about one guy. I know you're a Braves fan, so I wanted to get your thoughts on Ronald Acuña. But before we do that, I want to ask you about a couple guys, who are just kind of go over their first month. We're now a month into the season. Three guys that are, I think for me, have defined the baseball card world over the last few years, specifically last year, Shohei Ohtani, not just the baseball card world, but like just blew everybody away, obviously. And I think for me, the narrative with him, not for baseball fans, because I think like the average baseball fan knows like, this is incredible what we're watching. And even if there's a little bit of a drop off, like it's still mind blowing what he's doing. And he is off to, I guess, for his standards, a slow start, 4 home runs through 126 plate appearances. But he does have a 3.08 ERA and 14 strikeouts per 9 in his first 5 starts. This blew me away. I didn't actually know this until this morning. I was doing a little more research. His Black Label BGS 10 Topps Chrome Orange Rookie Auto just recently sold on Golden Auctions for $61,000, which is just like impossible to even wrap my head around.
Right.
I was going to go in with this narrative of like, I think the hobby is going to cool down on him just a little bit just because he can't replicate what he did last year. And looking at that, I'm clearly wrong. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the future of like, do you think like, for baseball card collectors, that he is in this maybe rarefied era of like, it's never gonna go down at this point. Like, even maybe the ups and downs are just not gonna be that extreme because of what he accomplished last year.
Yeah, I think it's still very like capable of going down, and what would cause that would be like the wear and tear of you know, like this very aggressive usage leads to some sort of major injury, which I think is like a real, you know, that's a real concern. He plays more baseball than anyone else. You know, like you look at his combined plate appearances and batter's face, like over the course of 162 games, like his usage is higher than anyone else in the league. So that would really be the main thing. But as far as like how he's playing now, you know, you mentioned a little bit of a power outage at the plate. Like, he has four homers, but I don't think he has a homer in his last like 80 plate appearances or something like that. So he started off hitting a bunch of homers. But on the flip side, I mean, the pitching is like, he's a way better pitcher than last year. Like, yeah, last year, I mean, he has the same ERA as he did last year, but like the advanced stats, he's got a big increase in his fastball velocity. I mean, he has a 3 ERA, but he has like a, like what's his, like his, like his FIP and xFIP are like 1.5, which is just, you know, that's a product of, you know, the strikeout rate you talked about earlier. So, you know, I do think some of it will be dictated by like, will we ever see another Ohtani? You know, if there's another two-way guy who can come along someday with just a somewhat comparable skill set, I mean, that probably does devalue him, but otherwise, I mean, yeah, I think he's in pretty like rarefied air, as you put it, because he's the only person who does this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still such a thrill to see him every day on the mound. And I think you mentioned it. The pitching to me is what's is really exciting about him right now, because I think the bat's going to come around. But the fact that he looks like a better pitcher and there's a better pitching staff around him right now, I think it could be very, very exciting. And who knows, maybe actually the thing that I think will end up benefiting him is the fact that the team's good for the first time in a while. So maybe they, you know, Joe Maddon maybe is okay letting him sit a couple days as DH because the lineup right now is clicking. So I'm still very, very excited to see what he can do this year. I still think that the bat's going to come around. But man, for baseball card collectors, I think he is in that zone of like, I think maybe just a shade under Trout right now, where he is like untouchable at this moment, both, you know, for what his value is and for basically anyone who actually wants to buy in on Shohei Ohtani at this point. It's kind of that price is a little prohibitive, I think, for most collectors right now. Next guy I want to talk about is a guy I was super, super high on going into the season, Luis Robert of the Chicago White Sox. White Sox, weird season so far. Very, very streaky. They're back at 500 now. I think just got over 500 in that series against the Red Sox this weekend. And Luis Robert, when he's been healthy, I think he's looked pretty good. 4 home runs, 5 stolen bases, and a 129 WRC plus through 80 plate appearances. His stuff this offseason, his cards this offseason, I should say, way, way down. And I don't know if it's just the injury last year, that 2020, he kind of scuffled for half the season. And I think collectors got kind of cooled off on him a little bit. Things have gone up considerably since the season started, which I found a little interesting. I guess I need to give a little more credit to a lot of collectors that they're really paying attention, because I think when you look at the stat line, it doesn't like jump out at you initially. Where are you on Luis Robert for his future and also for his future in trading cards? I feel like he's still a pretty solid investment right now.
Yeah, I'm extremely pro, and you know, I kind of had the same experience like last year. When he was healthy and playing well, I bought some Luis Robert. And then when the offseason hit, I was like, wow, he's so much cheaper than when I bought him. And so I doubled down basically.
Yeah.
And just bought some more. But yeah, I mean, I'm extremely pro Luis Robert. On my second channel, I ranked the top 50 players in MLB going into the season. I think I had Robert at like 25, which is extremely aggressive. But the reason I like Robert so much is just because he is like one of those guys that if just everything goes right for him, like he could just have like a 10 war season, because the raw power is insane, and he's just a fantastic defender in center field, in my opinion. Like he could be like a borderline like platinum glove guy at some point in his career. Like, that's how good I think he is at defense. And yeah, as far as how Robert's performing this year, you're seeing an approach that, and you know, it mirrors last year a little bit too. He's definitely more He's swing heavy and he's contact heavy, and so maybe like his, you know, his ISO and his power numbers won't be that better, but it'll make him a more consistent hitter overall. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, in 2020 he was striking out 32% of the time, and in 2022 he's striking out 15% of the time. So he's literally slashed his strikeout rate in half, which was the main concern about him. So as far as I'm concerned, like, there is no time like the present to buy Luis Robert, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And yeah, I think he's still like, I think there's still some cards on the lower end. If you want to grab like some of his top Chrome rookies and stuff like that, I think that are still pretty reasonably priced for what I think that we're both in agreement what this guy is capable of. Just every time I watch him, it's just further proof that I think this guy is going to be a star. I said at the beginning of the season, I think he's an MVP. I think he's a sleeper MVP candidate. If this White Sox team can get things rolling, which it looks like they're finally starting to do, although the Twins look pretty dang good right now, and mm-hmm. Byron Buxton making a good case for MVP as well. All right, let's talk about your Braves. I know you're a Braves fan. Kind of a tumultuous offseason with all the stuff going on with Matt Olson, Ronald Acuna, Freddie Freeman, all that stuff. And but really the story right now is that Acuna's back and doesn't even look like he skipped a beat, like just looks as good as he ever has through his first nine games. Two home runs, a 500 slugging percentage, 149 weighted runs created plus. And I think what's remarkable from a trading card standpoint is that, you know, a guy's out for half a season, more than half a season, they're just going to lose value. It's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter who they are. And I think what's crazy about Acuna is that it didn't really affect him that much. His trading card value did not dip as extreme as I thought it would. Maybe that's because the Braves made a World Series run, and so people just saw his face every couple of days anyway. But I think it also just speaks to that people love this guy in the trading card world, and for good reason. Like, he is a remarkable talent, and lately has been reminding us exactly why the Braves were probably okay letting Freddie Freeman walk. Obviously getting Matt Olson helps to do that, but I think the letting Freeman walk was a signal to Acuna and a signal to the team and its future that this is his team now. Mm-hmm. And we're investing in Acuna. Do you got any Acuna? Were you lucky to have any of Ronald Acuna in the collection? And how you feeling about what you've seen so far from him?
Yeah, I know it's like bat up, bat down or whatever. Like, this is showing how much you knew I am. But whatever's the most common one, that's the one I have.
I think that's the one right there.
I have that. You're right. I was surprised. I feel like if he had dropped more, I probably would have bought more. But it just didn't drop that much. And I think he's probably a player that, you know, we talk about Luis Robert, a lot of it has been timing. And I think Acuna is probably a player that you shouldn't try to time. You should just buy him if you like him, and just don't buy him if you don't like him. As far as how he's playing right now, it's been the opposite of what I thought. I thought, like, okay, this guy is a player who relies on his athleticism coming off a torn ACL. Like, they're going to go easy on him, and he's just like stealing bases like it never happened. Like, it's absolutely preposterous, to be honest with you. He's just like, he is just the exact same guy on the base pass, and he clearly has a lot of confidence in that knee. And as far as his hitting, like, I would just like be a little bit wary of the chase rate, because he does not have the discipline yet. And that was really what was the exciting development for him in 2020 and 2021. He was looking a little bit more Soto-like in terms of dropping his chase rate, upping his walk rate, and that hasn't really been present. And that's going to be like a rhythm thing for him. He just probably needs to see more pitches. But I would just, you know, keep an eye on that chase rate for now, because you know, he's striking out like a third of the time, and that's not going to be sustainable. But also, I don't think he's going to strike out a third of the time going forward. So that's sort of the pump the brakes on Acuna a little bit, is just keep an eye on the chase rate.
Yeah, but I'm in agreement with you about the athleticism has been wild to see out of the gate. I mean, I think if he had his way, he would have been on the opening day roster. He felt like he was ready to go, I think, as soon as possible. But yeah, just seeing the base running this weekend, I mean, going, I think there was a play where there was an error, or I can't quite remember, but where
he scored from like, first on a loop.
That's what it was. That's what it was. That just blew my mind more than anything else I've seen from him so far. Just incredible. The home run falling down. I mean, it is crazy that he had just a season's worth of highlights this weekend, and we're only 9 games of the season with him. I think he just basically is proving the point of, like, this is why when I'm on, I am the most electrifying guy in all of baseball. And I'm not going to question it. I want to get back to just kind of put your fan hat on here, talking about Freddie Freeman. I think you expressed some thoughts on social media about kind of making the shift from Freddie to Matt Olson. And I think that it's a very level-headed approach of like, hey, Freddie got the ring. Great for him. He got mission accomplished, and thanks for the memories and go off and do your thing in LA. When you first heard that news, was it a shock for you as a fan? Did you expect him to come back? And also from a trading card perspective, I should ask, are you going to maybe collect more Freddie Freeman as you go along, as his career progresses or probably finishes with the Dodgers?
Yeah. So I mean, obviously going into the offseason, I thought they were going to extend him and that would be it. And I'd been saying extend Freddie for basically years, you know, about once a month on Twitter. You know, I had a little bit of a heads up, a little bit of insider knowledge about the Matt Olson trade getting cooked up. And so I had a few days to sort of make peace with it before it happened. Mm-hmm. And it's alleviated by the fact that, as you said, first of all, they won a World Series with Freddie Freeman. And, you know, for me, having watched, you know, Braves baseball for the last decade or so has been all about that. It's been all about how do we get Freddie Freeman, you know, Commissioner's Trophy in his hands. That's what it's really been all about. So there is an element of mission accomplished there. And it's also alleviated by the fact that I just love Matt Olson. I mean, what a great player. He steps in and it's just like you get a very similar level of production out of a younger player. So, you know, and I say all these things and it still hurts. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Rome, Georgia, which is where they have one of their minor league affiliates. So I saw Freddie Freeman play there when he was probably like 18 or 19. And so it's just everything has just been Freddie Freeman ever since. And he's gone now, you know, and I'm glad he's in Southern California where he's from. I'm glad Matt Olson's in Atlanta where he's from. I'm kind of hoping that it will go a little bit the Pujols route where you have, you know, this guy who played about 10 years, won the World Series in his final year, went out west, gets the payday, and then Pujols is back on the Cardinals for one last ride. And I think maybe I'm really hoping for like a Freeman DH age 38 year and then he can retire or something like that.
that would be the ideal scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, Freddie Freeman is going to have some great years in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, as a Giants fan, I have to say that he's probably going to be very good for a long time and torment the rest of the division. I think in the long run, things have worked out for all parties involved. It was a little messy there. I wish it wasn't as messy as it was. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the main regret. Even like the Acuna comments that I think might have been a little bit like making a little too much of it, that I think he even came out and was like, Freddie's my guy still, like, but you know, I think there was a lot of truth to what he was saying, that he has been kind of restrained, and again, I think the decision to let Freeman go is showing the Braves are ready to kind of let Acuna do what he wants and call the shots. So I guess that would be the main thing. If I was a Braves fan, I would just wish that everything was a little bit cleaner. Maybe even if there was the expectation that Freddie was going to leave from the get-go, it would have been a little easier to accept. But yeah, just not the cleanest divorce with those two teams, unfortunately.
No, and there was some, you know, the it's one of those things. It's like, you know, how Freddie Freeman is portrayed in the media might not always be how people feel about him in the locker room, and there sometimes there's a disconnect there. I remember. Last season, there was there were some articles coming out where it just basically sounded like he was harassing Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies to play every single day, and, you know, never taking off day, and just, you know, and I get that's like who he is, and and that's, you know, that's his sort of leadership style. But yeah, I mean, it is possible to be happy, smiley Freddie Freeman and also ruffle some feathers. I mean, these people are human. So I think it's just sort of helpful to keep that in mind, no matter who we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I think it also speaks to, you know, it was Chipper Jones really took him under his wing when he first comes up there. So I think there is maybe a little bit of Chipper, that old school baseball in him, that I think he passed on. So hey, maybe we'll see how it works with the Dodgers. There's a lot of stars and a lot of egos in the locker room. So, you know, have fun with that. Enjoy. Yeah, we'll see how things play out. I think it's going to play out pretty well for the Braves. Matt Olson, I mean, watching him in the Bay Area the last few years, just this feeling of like, it's only a matter of time until this guy is like a household name, just such a sweet swing, just a great player all around. So yeah, he's going to do very, very well and become a fast fan favorite, I think, in Atlanta. All right, let's move on to the final segment. This is our segment that we call the Taxi Squad. Basically, who are we calling up? Who are we sending down? And who are we holding? Buy, sell, or hold, basically.
Gotcha.
And we've got five members of the Taxi Squad, really four, and then I threw in a wild card here, and really focusing on players who have underperformed so far. Usually on the Taxi Squad, we like to highlight guys who are hot, but I think a month into the season, it's time to look at some guys that I think especially baseball card collectors have had their eyes on for the last few years. So let me throw a few names at you. I'm actually going to start with a guy who was involved in the Matt Olson deal, and that is Christian Pache, who got off to a nice start with Oakland. Obviously, it's a rough situation in Oakland. I feel terrible for everybody that's dealing with what's going on with the ownership basically just putting up the white flag the day after the lockout. But Pache, a really good young talent, was excited that the A's at least got a guy like him in that deal. Unfortunately, I think he's among the worst in OPS among qualified hitters right now, a 35 weighted runs created plus so far. The last I saw on May 1st, his 2018 first Bowman Chrome base auto, a PSA 10, sold for about $100 on eBay. So are you buying, selling, or holding on Christian Pache right now?
I would hold. He's a guy that you should just be like checking in on pretty frequently. You know, look, just if you start to see an improvement in the offensive numbers, I think you can kind of convert that to a buy, but you definitely shouldn't sell because, I mean, this guy's calling card, first of all, is his, he plays like 80 grade defense. And I think he's shown a lot of that in the majors so far. So, you know, you just need you're just like begging him to be like a league average hitter or something like that, so he can put up like 4 and 5 WAR seasons and then, you know, make himself into a big name in Oakland, hopefully. But yeah, I would not buy, I would not sell. I would just hold and see what he does.
Yeah, there's been flashes, especially with the glove lately, that they're the defense is legit. Would like to see the bat come around at the plate. And I guess the only other thing that would give me hesitation is just he's in Oakland, and guys tend to, the moment guys have a good season in Oakland, it's like, well, they got 2 more years of arbitration. Time to sell. It can be a little frustrating as an A's fan. And I know plenty of A's fans who have been very, very frustrated the last few years and clearly are showing it with their attendance right now. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what he could do a full season. A's are going to give him all the at-bats. I guess that's the other really good part as well. He's going to get plenty of time to perfect things. Moving on to another guy in the AL West. This is a guy that I think I saw was on your players you weren't as hot on going into 2022. Seattle Mariners, Jared Kelnick. The rookies for the Mariners, you know, good for them for saying we're going for it, but we're also going to give our top prospects a chance to prove themselves. Julio Rodriguez, the bat's starting to come around. Julio Rodriguez has also been like one of the most unlucky players, I feel like, in baseball this year. So glad to see his bats coming around. But Kelnick has just gotten off to a dreadful start. Like, he's batting 152, a 316 slugging percentage through 88 plate appearances. And yet his value in the hobby hasn't really budged all that much. It has gone down, but Let's see. Recently, a PSA 10 First Bowman Chrome Base Auto sold for $565 on May 1st. And his cards, we get this information from our friends over at Card Ladder, and his estimated value on there is lower consistently than the actual sale value. So collectors are still high on this guy. And man, we have seen a lot of him now. We saw him in 2021. We're seeing him at the beginning of this year. I'm not ready to totally give up on him, but it also kind of feels like if you do sell on Kelnick at this point, I'm not going to blame you.
Yeah, I would sell. I mean, but I kind of had it like preseason that way, right? Like, yeah. I just, you know, there have been guys who had career starts similar to his who went on and had good careers, but not a lot of like, I mean, you know, when you're talking about someone who's like a former top two, top three prospect, like you pay such a premium because they're showing up on all those lists and all the, you don't have to be a hobbyist to know that, you know, Jared Kelnick's like a big deal and you should buy one of his cards. But yeah, it's just like the guys who have had similar career starts to him and still had good careers were like Paul Konerko and like Brandon Phillips. Like, they aren't Hall of Famers, no. You know? And so I would, you know, he's striking out 36% of the time this year. Clearly the leash, you know, yes, the Mariners are going to give their prospects a chance, but clearly for a team being competitive, like the leash is running out on him. Like Kyle Lewis is rehabbing in the minors right now. Like that could be a trip back to AAA for Jared Kelnick if they go with him instead. And I kind of called that preseason. So I'm saying Kelnick's a sell right now. I'm not saying he's a sell forever though. I mean, he still obviously has the pedigree. And so he's one of those guys that you can sell now. He's probably not going to have that great of a year. And then if you just feel better about him at a certain price point, once he's like bottomed out or if he starts to rally back, yeah, then you can buy into it again. But I would have him listed as a sell right now. And I would have had him listed as a sell a month ago, too.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, I was just kind of shocked that the price of his cards has still not completely bottomed out, considering what he's done. And yeah, you mentioned it. Kyle Lewis is a guy that I think is the guy to keep an eye on right now. Obviously, a great 2020 in that short season. Would love to see him turn things around. And I think that's really what's going to push this decision for the Mariners, obviously. There's just too many bodies in that outfield, so somebody's going to have to get sent down, and right now it does seem like Kelnick would be the guy to have to get a little extra time in the minor leagues. A guy who got called up on opening day for the Detroit Tigers, Spencer Torkelson. The rookies were the big story in the baseball card world to start the season. The fact that we were getting Torkelson, Bobby Witt, Julio Rodriguez, these like star prospects the last few years, all coming up. Very, very exciting time. Things have settled quite a bit. Rodriguez, as mentioned, kind of turning things around. Bobby Witt, there's some great defensive highlights, but the offense isn't quite there. But Torkelson right now is probably the one struggling the most at the plate. A 167 average, just a 295 slugging percentage for him so far through 91 plate appearances, two for his last 23. I still really like him, and maybe for him, part of this is the Tigers, I think, had their sights set to make a huge splash this year. And maybe that was a bit premature with the Javier Baez deal, Eduardo Rodriguez. I was kind of buying in on the Tigers. I liked what they did this offseason. And I thought like some of the pitching, I thought the pitchers were going to come around, and a guy like Rodriguez, his stats, I thought were going to look better at Comerica Park. Clearly hasn't been the case. But Spencer Torkelson, his value is still incredibly high in the baseball card world. Recently, on April 24th, his first Bowman Chrome base auto, a PSA 10, sold for over $1,500.
Wow.
So it doesn't feel like a buy right now, but I'm also not ready to sell this guy.
Yeah, and you know, if you find a card you like, I would lean towards buy because, you know, he has the pedigree. And yeah, if you just, you know, you've said it yourself, like it just depends on how much the hype has died out from opening day, whether it makes sense to jump on him now or wait. You can probably afford to wait. If we're prioritizing, you know, the guys you just talked about right now, I'd say Julio is top priority. And then I would actually put Torkelson second and Witt third. So that may be, you know, a little bit of a divergence from the crowd right there. And also, you know, just if while we're talking Spencer Torkelson, you can't not talk Riley Green because he's tearing it up in AAA right now. And if he gets called up and has like a good first week, like his price is going to probably skyrocket too. So maybe keep an eye on him.
Oh, 100%. Riley Green, I think Torkelson's going to get the headlines because he was the number one pick and everybody in the hobby was chasing his cards in 2020 Bowman draft. So he was getting all the hobby headlines. But I think that, you know, as we were kind of looking at the prospects going into the season, it felt like Green is the play. His stuff is cheaper than Spencer Torkelson. He's obviously ranked higher on most of the prospect lists. Mm-hmm. It just kind of felt like Riley Green is the guy. And the only thing holding him back was the injury to start the season. So, yeah, totally in agreement that I think Riley Green of those Tigers prospects, probably the better play in the baseball card world. Moving on to a guy who's not kind of a veteran guy, the first veteran guy we're going to talk about here. One of the most disappointing starts in baseball has got to be the Boston Red Sox so far. They're in last place behind the Orioles in the AL East right now. Looking real rough right now in Beantown, but Trevor Story was their big contract, their big, big free agent signing. And you had to imagine that so many big free agent shortstops, one of them was going to fail. I guess I'll throw in Marcus Semien in there as well, even though he's playing second. But I think what's been kind of striking is that none of these big free agent shortstop, or I'd have to rack my brain a little bit, but off the top of my head, I mean, Seager has gone off to a slow start. Semien, Correa has had some ups and downs. And now Trevor Story, I think, probably the most disappointing right now so far. He's among the worst in OPS among qualified hitters, unfortunately. And his cards aren't super expensive. A 170 for a BGS 9.5 first Bowman Chrome auto. So the price point's not super crazy, but I also don't know how much better it gets. Maybe he turns things around in Boston and you do big things on the Red Sox, you're going to gain a lot of attention you weren't going to get in Colorado. I think we've seen like Nolan Arenado in St. Louis, so much more attention, I think, than he had in Colorado. And you've seen, I think, the hobby react swiftly. So where are we at on Trevor Story right now?
I think if you have a lot of Trevor Story, maybe he's a hold. Or maybe he's, you know what, I'm going to say sell because it's just, here's the thing about him right now. And I love Trevor Story. Last season, I was talking about he's going to be such a great signing for whatever team gets him. And the thing that has scared me off, he's not hitting great, obviously, but I'm not actually too concerned about that. I think he can hit just fine this season. It's just the overall value is so dictated by his ability to play a plus shortstop, and now he's like a second baseman for them. And a big reason why he's a second baseman for him is I've seen some like Trevor Story fear-mongering about his elbow, basically. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't, you know, some of like the velocities on the throws and stat cast, like he just doesn't have the arm strength that he did 2 years ago. And that's, I think, a big reason why he's, you know, mostly second base now, while they still have Bogarts at shortstop, even though, you know, Story at his best is a way better defender at shortstop than Bogarts. So I have legitimate Trevor Story concerns for now. And I certainly wouldn't buy, but I would lean more towards, I'm in that sell hold range right now.
Yeah, it feels like the right place to be. And I think even with the lower value for those cards compared to these other guys we're talking about, you know, and I can never, ever get my brain out of how they're going to, like, the Coors Field effect, especially seeing a lot of games in Coors. Like, I can never, ever separate my brain, even though there's been so many times where guys leave Coors Field and they're fine. Like,
yeah,
Matt Holliday, I just mentioned Nolan Arenado. These guys do fine. LeMahieu has been great in New York. And yet my brain still can't get past that. And a great place to hit in Fenway Park for Trevor Story. So maybe that does benefit him in the long run. But yeah, there are some defensive issues, I think, going into the rest of his career. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. That Red Sox team it's getting late early for that Red Sox team. And, you know, I think they'll be better, but the Rays and the Blue Jays and the Yankees are going to all still be really good. And, I don't really know what Boston, what they can do to kind of counteract that right now. Things are getting a little rough right now for the Red Sox. So one more to throw at you. I always like to throw a wild card at the end. Sure. We talked a lot about hitters because this is what baseball cards do. We don't give love to pitchers in the baseball card world. So I'm going to try to give some love to five or four guys, really, who are doing it in the desert right now. The Arizona Diamondbacks. The words coming out of my mouth, I still feel like someone's playing a trick on me. Have the second best starter ERA in the major leagues behind the Los Angeles Dodgers entering today. I saw Zach Gallen look great this week, and Merrill Kelly to me is the one that just blows me away what he's done with the Diamondbacks. And you know what? It's been, I did not expect, I think that the most surprising for me is the fact that Madison Bumgarner, at least the stats right now, are backing it up. I don't know how long that holds up. I've seen him the last few years, and he just doesn't have that same, he just doesn't have it as much on the mound. The stuff is just not as good as it was even the last few years with the Giants. Bumgarner is the most expensive guy in terms of trading cards. I think I saw nothing above $150 for Bumgarner right now. Are you buying on any of these guys? Buying, selling, holding on any of these Diamondbacks pitchers right now?
Not buying Bumgarner. I know. I get that his ERA is his ERA is 1.5, but there's nothing in his profile indicates that he has a chance to get anywhere close to that. If there are players you should look at, it's probably Gallen and Kelly. They both look very good. And, you know, I should give a shout out to Brent Strom, the former Astros pitching coach, because he's the one who is working the magic over there. And it's very clear that, you know, as soon as he gets over there and they have, as you said, one of the best rotations in the league so far, like that is an absolutely a credit to him. Gallen is, you know, he's a guy who's probably been on the radar for people before in terms of, you know, just thinking about who's going to be, you know, the great pitchers of the future, who's like a dark horse Cy Young candidate in any given year, because he is just, you know, he's massively talented. But Merrill Kelly, I think, just has looked almost every bit as good this season. And also, like, I remember just watching him in spring training, just like, wow, he looks like a completely different pitcher. So, you know, it might just be fun to buy some Merrill Kelly just because it's probably just incredibly cheap. You could, you know, if you're balling on a budget like I usually am, you can probably afford to get whatever the nicest Merrill Kelly card there is out there and just see what happens. So Gallen's great. But I mean, Merrill Kelly would probably be like the most fun you could have in the hobby right now.
I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, if you buy a Merrill Kelly, I didn't look up exactly what his cards were before we started, but I got to imagine you could get a pretty decent Merrill Kelly for like $20, $30 right now. Hey, if he makes the All-Star team, then it's probably going to be a nice little profit when the All-Star game comes around in LA.
Exactly.
Fun team. Every team in the NL West over 500 right now, which is, man, I guess that's how you counteract two 100 win teams in the division. We'll see how long it lasts in Arizona, but you mentioned, I think that the coaching staff, that change in pitching coach has made such a difference. And I think we've seen it the last few years that it just more teams are maybe getting hip to, like, it's about the guy, it's about the messenger. And we've seen it with multiple teams. I know I keep bringing up my Giants, but like the coaching staff changes and everything with that ball club changed. It's just almost magically. I won't throw in any mentions of cheating labs, but things can change pretty quick with the messenger. So it's been incredible to see what's going on with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Hey, Bailey, thanks so much for joining me today. I want to see if you don't want to mention what's next for Foolish Baseball, don't worry about it, but maybe any teasers on what's to come for Foolish Baseball.
Yeah, we're talking, you know, people love they seem to really love the pitching content. And so the next episode of Baseball Bits will be about a pitcher.
All right. Good enough. That's enough of a mystery and enough of a bait to get me hooked on the next video. Bailey, thanks so much for joining me again. The YouTube channel, Foolish Bailey, and Foolish Baseball, obviously the main Foolish Baseball, Foolish Bailey as well. Check both of them out. Great stuff. Some of the best that baseball YouTube has to offer. Bailey, thanks so much for joining me.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks once again to Bailey for joining me on the show. If you're not already watching Foolish Baseball on YouTube, go do it. It is one of the best places for any baseball content anywhere on the internet, on TV, whatever. Some of the best videos you're going to find for baseball fans to nerd out. Foolish Baseball is the YouTube channel. Also, check out his second channel, Foolish Bailey, on YouTube as well. And you can check out more of us on YouTube at Mojo Break Media. We post clips of our podcasts, this one, Wax Packs and Warning Tracks, and The Hype. which drops every Thursday on this same feed. If you're subscribed to us, Mojo Break Sports Card Show. If you're not subscribed to us, that's the name to search. Subscribe to it wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks every Tuesday. New episodes of The Hype every Thursday. And make sure to go to Mojo Break Media and check out our new video coming very soon. We had a chance to hang out with Wee Man of Jackass fame. Had some fun. Check it out on Mojo Break Media. We had a really good time. Until next week, I'm Cody Pasby. Thanks so much for hanging out with me on Wax Packs and Warning Tracks.